Okay, welcome. I am here again with another one of my friends who also happen to be experts in their field, Mr. Tim Freake. And we are going to be chatting today about the shadow and shadow integration, and also Tim's philosophical theory called emergent spirituality. I have a book and an online course about shadow integration and the shadow, and Tim has a book and online course about emergent spirituality. So we're going to chat about both subjects individually and together and see what happens. Because one thing I've learned from working with Tim and chatting with him is you never quite know where the conversation goes. And that's why I love having conversations with him, because it feels really authentic. And little insight for those who haven't hung out with Tim socially, he is always philosophizing. Like, I was in the pub with him once, and after that talk we did together in, I think it was in Dublin, and he came to the table carrying drinks. He put them down and went, "Love. The concept of love, I mean, what's all that about?" And then rolled his sleeves up. And I was like, oh my God, he is actually a philosopher. It's not like on-duty philosopher and off-duty philosopher. It's not a job for him. It's a thing. He is a philosopher. So yes, it's a pleasure to be with a true philosopher man, who is alive today in these emergingly spiritual times. Tim, pleasure to be with you. How are you?
Thank you very much for that lovely intro. Delighted. Delighted to be, because I've been thinking for a while about, because obviously I read your book before it came out and we discussed the ideas a fair bit. And I think working with the shadow is so important. I mean, really essential. And I'm interested in how that can be understood with this new philosophy that I'm articulating, which is far too big for us to talk about in its all its depth and broadness, but be interesting to focus in on what it says about the psyche. I can remember emailing you a few weeks ago, just off the cuff, going, "So, what do you think the psyche is? What's it
Yeah,
made of?"
dude, I
And
was
that's
like,
kind of where my mind's been going when I
who
think about the
emails
shadow.
someone that? You sent me an
Well,
email
I'm
saying,
getting so excited, I'm steaming up here.
P.S., what do you think the psyche is, Charlie? And I was like, I don't know, dude. Oh my God, that's so huge. But it started cooking my brain. And I was like, right, I'm not answering that email very quickly. And then I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was like, what is it? What is this thing that we call psyche? Does it contain the self, or is it something that creates the illusion of self? Is the psyche itself illusion? Does it have like mass? Is it existent? All this kind of stuff. And I think that's great because that's a perfect example of one of your philosophizing emails. You sign off with PSs. What do you think the psyche could be? Fuck, man.
Well, that's what we need. If you're going to look, I mean, obviously there's the practical, straightforward practical stuff you can do with the shadow. But if you want to go into the depth of it to know why you're doing it, what it is, then these questions can become really, really powerful. So the place I start from is going is actually it's actually quite a traditional place, although my place I want to end up is very untraditional. But because it seems to me that the psyche, which is just the Greek for soul, the soul is a non-material element of our identity. And it's where you and I can see your body, you can see this body, bodies are we're different ages and different all that sort of stuff, different places. And then there's this thing we're experiencing also, which is imagination, which is psyche, which doesn't exist in space. It isn't made of matter, but it's where you're most you're mo it's where you are Charlie more than anywhere else, and I'm Tim more than anywhere else. And it's the soul. It's what we are. So as our individuality, it feels it's we are souls. That's what we are. We're psyches, and it's made of what? It's made of images. When I look at it, there it is now. I can just be aware of it. In dreams, which is your area of expertise, we go right into the whole domain of psyche. The Tibetan Buddhists, with the which you obviously have gone deeply into with their understanding of the bardos, is that there's a whole dimension of imagination of psyche, and that what the deep thing, which you said about the self, is whether there's a deeper identity which is non-personal. And as someone interested in deep awakening, I am convinced from my experience that there is. So there's a place where you and I are one thing. And then there's a place where you and I are two things. Mm-hmm. And the deep self, that deep being, is the place where there's one of us. And that's beautiful and interesting. But here, where there's two of us, is also beautiful and interesting.
Yeah.
And that's where we're psyche or soul.
Yeah. As you talked about the psyche there, the image that came to me was dark matter. You know, like dark matter and dark energy, right? Suppose, I think it's dark matter is 95% of the known universe. Dark energy is 98% of the known universe. So we don't know what 98% of the known universe is, but we know it exists because of its effect on things around it, on that other 2%. And when you were talking there about the psyche, you know, it doesn't have form, it doesn't have shape, and yet we know it's there. It reminded me of that. It's like the dark energy or the dark matter of the mind. It seems to be almost the totality of it. And yet it shows itself in its effect on other things in the mind that we can see rather than showing itself directly.
Let me throw in another really important idea in this philosophy of emergent spirituality, which is about time. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's necessary to understand time is necessary to understand everything. Because when I look at the moment, like right now, what I'm experiencing is ever-changing experiences. State the obvious, and that's time. There is a flow of experience happening. Every moment is a new moment, which is emerging. So it seems to me that reality, by its very nature, is this flow of time, a time stream, and that the whole universe, therefore, is actually a process. And everything within it, although it looks like we think of things, as if they exist only in the moment, there really is no isolated moment. There's always a flow of time. So everything is a process. You and I are processes. The psyche is also a process. And processes are made of time. So that we can start looking at time and going, look, time is what everything is made of. And by that I mean that this moment now is made of everything that's ever happened before. It contains within it, implicitly, every single thing that's ever happened, from the Big Bang through the evolution of the cosmos, through the evolution of the human body, to us learning to speak language, everything, to our meeting for the very first time, to this, everything that's ever happened is implicit in this moment. So the past hasn't gone anywhere. The past exists implicitly in the present. And the present is where that everything that has happened, that is fixed and formed, meets everything that could happen, which is possible, unformed, mystery. You don't know what's going to happen next. All that you know is that the next moment will have two clear properties to it. It will be brand new. It will never have happened before. It will be the realization of a new possibility, and it will contain within it everything that's happened in the past. Yeah. Every moment has that quality. So every moment is the past meeting the possible. Now, those are pretty big ideas. I've just thrown in really fast, but I want to move on because what I want to get to is psyche. So then if everything is made of the past, then psyche is made of the past. And what we are as souls, what we are as psyches, is everything we've ever been, every experience we've ever had. And not just us personally, but going back collectively too. And with the possibility of transmigration or reincarnation of souls, maybe way back and back and back and back and back and back. So right now, everything that Tim has ever experienced as a psyche is meeting everything that Charlie's ever experienced as a psyche. In this new moment, manifesting something possible. Then you can go, oh, well, so what the psyche is a flow of imagination, made of images, and made of everything that it's ever experienced, which enables you to then look at things like the shadow and the golden shadow concept, which you use, I know, and start going, oh, so this is about our relationship with the past.
Yeah.
And because that's what we're made of.
Yeah.
We're made of the past. So in the present, which is the past meeting the possible, we have to negotiate the past because this moment will include it, whether we like it or not. It will include it. And that gives a real interesting, I think, philosophical base for why shadow work is so important.
There's always one of those moments when I chat with you, Tim. Okay, amazing. So, well, we've nailed the psyche. We're done. We can move on. Wow, amazing, man. I mean, I'm going to need some time to cook in that. But I remember the first time you took me through your emergent spirituality theory when you were writing the book. And I remember you gave me a much longer version of what you just gave then. And at the end, I went, you know, that kind of makes sense. And I had this sense of surprise in my voice, not surprise that your theory made sense, but that such a grand theory of how mind came into emergence, or how soul came into emergence, was complete. And that it didn't, there was no glaring error or hole within it. It really seemed like a complete theory. Yeah, brilliant. Okay, back to the
well, thank you very much.
The question on shadow. Okay, so if the shadow is, yeah, if that's what the psyche is the sum total of, if the shadow is the sum total of everything within us that we have repressed, denied, or disowned, be that our shame, our fear, our traumas, or our hidden talents, our disowned spirituality. I think for many people, the greatest shadow trait they have is their Buddha nature. You know, I'm much more willing to sit here and own up to my shadow traits of sexual trauma and shame and anger and irritability than I am to own up to the fact that I, like you and everybody watching this, has Buddha nature, has the potential to be a fully enlightened, awakened being, and in fact, are already that. So if the shadow is the sum total of everything we've repressed, denied, disowned within us, and if all that we are is the sum total of the experience of time, how would integration of the shadow, so integration of the energy that that repressed shadow material contains, help with the emergence of our soul, of awakening?
Well, for me, the whole process we're in is to create the character of the soul. Mm-hmm. So there's two fundamental ways that are very, very particular, I think, in of looking at this. One would be tends to be the Eastern model, mm-hmm, which sees us as fallen from some better place, got caught up in an illusion we need to return to. We're really all that already. We've just a big mistake. We need to get back. Mm-hmm. And then there's the model you get, say, in Jung, which is a more... it's about forming the individuality. In the Eastern model, fundamentally, the individuality is in the way. Mm-hmm. So that the shadow work, if it exists at all, and it does in some and not in other traditions, you get it clearly in Zen, for instance, mm-hmm, where it's about cleaning the mirror. Mm-hmm. You clean up the shadow stuff, so you've got a clean mirror, it reflects your Buddha nature perfectly, ta-da, you've arrived. Uh-huh. There's no value to it in itself, it's just an unfortunate necessity. Mm-hmm. You have to do the cleaning, and once you've done, you're done. With the more progressive versions in, say, in Jung or in various Western traditions, mm-hmm, actually the forming of the individual is not a mistake. Mm-hmm. It's the whole point. Mm-hmm. And the fact that every moment we're being formed, we're now more formed than we were when we started this conversation. Because mm-hmm, we're forming. Every experience is forming us. Oh, there we go again. There we go again. Because we are made of our experience. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, well, how do you choose to form yourself in this process of soul formation, of psyche formation? Mm-hmm. And part of that is, do you just play out the product of repressing the past or being controlled by the past or the habitual problems we have of, you know, suppressing and then being possessed and, mm-hmm, oh God, all of that shame? Or do you actually consciously engage with what Jung and you call the shadow? So my attempt with emergent spirituality is to actually bring the best of those two traditions together. I think they can be harmonized, although they seem like opposites. So that it's not just about cleaning the mirror to get away. It's actually about forming the soul in a more and more clear and robust way, so that it becomes more conscious, so it can awaken to these depths. Mm-hmm. And my suspicion is that the shadow, the things we repress, the negative side, is stuff in the past that is less emergent aspects of ourself. So it's the animal instincts, which in themselves are fine on that level, but if they come onto another level, can make us quite brutal. Yeah. Or egotistical elements in a negative sense, that it's just about me. Well, it's not, it's about all of us. Mm-hmm. But it's also about me, but it's not just about me. Or things that have sexual stuff, all sorts of things which kind of like have a weight to them, like the past has a weight like gravity that pulls us back as a passivity. Oh, it makes us do it again, or get stuck in things. And then, of course, there's also things in us which are where we've glimpsed deeper potentials. Mm-hmm. So there is a part of us, I feel, which has already been before, which was there before we were, before I was Tim, mm-hmm. something which has been disincarnate mm-hmm. and been through this process many times. You called it the Buddha nature, the knower nature. It's also, you can call it the daemon, the genius mm-hmm. is a name I really like, the Roman name for it, the genius. And it's the, I think it's the part of us that has already been one with the oneness. It's a part of us that has already been in our past one with God. Or, and therefore we're not there now, but we can reconnect with it. And then it can carry on emerging and developing.
And that part remembers what it's like to be.
Yeah, exactly. When we retouch it, there it is. It's all part of us.
Yeah.
So it seems that what we're engaged in then is a process of soul transmutation, a bit like the alchemists were really good at this, which is why I like that word, taking lead and churning it into gold. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that most of us know that our deepest wisdom has come from our deepest wound.
Yeah.
So that the alchemist transmutation of the past, you can't change what happened. Mm-hmm. But you can re-understand it from a new place mm-hmm. because now you're not in that place. You've moved on. And then you can become wise. And then the thing which was dark and the thing which is holding you back and the shadow element that controls you suddenly becomes a source of great wisdom. And it becomes your greatest asset mm-hmm. and a great gift you can give to others because you've been through it.
Interesting, this term, wisdom. So from a Buddhist point of view, I was always interested in the use of this word ignorance and wisdom. Ignorance not meaning, you know, you're uneducated, but meaning not knowing what really is. So from a lucid dreaming point of view, a non-lucid dream is often referred to as a dream of ignorance. Not that it's worthless, not that it's an ignorant dream, but that because you didn't know it was a dream, you thought it was real life. And of course, every night we think our dreams are real life, right? It's only when we wake up, we go, oh, right, I'm not really the Queen of Egypt. I was dreaming I'm the Queen of Egypt. So a non-lucid dream is I have that dream all the time, is a dream of ignorance. That wisdom is seeing clearly or knowing what really is. So a lucid dream is a dream of wisdom because you see, oh, in fact, what I thought to be outside of me is inside of me. What I thought to be separate from me is non-separate, all this stuff. As far as emergent spirituality goes, what is the role that ignorance, not knowing what really is, plays in holding back that emergence, and the role that wisdom, knowing what really is, seeing clearly, plays in aiding that emergence?
So from the traditional spiritual point of view, we've fallen into ignorance and we need to return to wisdom. Mm-hmm. Emergent spirituality is an evolutionary point of view. The basic tenet, again, these are too big to go into now probably, but the basic underlying idea is very simple. It's that this moment right now mm-hmm. is the past becoming the possible. It's the formation of new possibilities all the time. Is the simple idea underlying emergent spirituality is everything that has come into form has evolved. Everything, including the bardos, including everything that has a form, which is more than just the formless potentiality, has evolved through this process of existence. Mm-hmm. So for there, ignorance is the less emergent state. It's simple as that. So each generation where it moves on, what we regard as ignorant changes because we've moved on. And for me, as a human being, I hope I can look back on things in the past and go, I've grown from that. I was ignorant then. But I've become wiser now, and I don't see that process ever ending. If you're going to engage with the evolutionary process, you need humility. Above all else, you need to, you know, be willing to be a fool and to see those dark places within yourselves and really confront all the stuff that's in the past, which is where we've come from. So the role that, and then the wisdom for me, well, I have this kind of idea, which I put it together with love. So it's kind of love wisdom, like one thing, the deepest thing, because it feels like the love is what happens when I wake up to the oneness, which is when I step out of the individual soul and touch this oneness of being. There's this incredible big love which holds everything. And then the wisdom is, how do I bring that in? How do I live from that? Because the seeing clearly that you say is from the metaphysical level of, like with the dream, is it real or is it a dream? Right down to the nitty-gritty practical stuff of, how do you be a good father? Is it to be indulgent and loving and everyone love you back? Or is it sometimes to be the person that everyone hates, but it's the right thing to do, for instance? Or how do you love an alcoholic? Do you just buy them a drink because they want one, or do you go no and do you cause them pain? There's a the wisdom is only, you only get it through time. You only get it through going around the block, making mistakes, seeing enough shit happen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the love is instant. It's like, it's just love. It holds everything together. Yeah. And then the wisdom is hard won through making the hero's journey.
Yeah.
And for me, what we're on is this process we're in of forming the character of our souls is that hero's journey. And it's not a mistake. And it's absolutely essential. Our lives matter. They really matter, because the whole of the evolution of the universe, 13.8 billion years of this process, has led to the story of Tim and the story of Charlie and the story of each individual who's watching this. And each person will have a soul story, which is just an amazing story if you sat down, even if they just sat in one room, especially if they just sat in one room for the whole of their life. You'd go, wow, really? That's incredible. I mean, you cannot help. Everyone has this story, this narrative, which is, and it's continuing in every second, and it becoming richer, becoming deeper.
Do you feel, when you were writing Soul Story, I wasn't kind of joking. I guess I was half joking when I said it, because I didn't know what your reaction would be, but I think I described, I said, like, oh, is this like your magnum opus? You know, this your life's work? And I thought you kind of laugh it off, and you kind of went, yeah, it might be. Now, you are in probably the last, well, God, I hope you're not in the last third of your life. I hope you live till you're 150 years old, but realistically, you're probably in the last third of your life now, right?
I hope it's a third. That would be great.
Do you feel that Soul Story and the emergent spirituality stuff could only have come about now because you've been around the block? Do you know what I mean? Because you've been doing this stuff for a while. Is it the product of that? Is it the product of, you know, 20 or 30 years of you teaching and doing this stuff?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the product of all my 58 years. And I did, funnily enough, you did say that to me, and I remembered it, and later it was like a revelation, although you had already said it. I thought, oh, all my life I've had this, my particular soul story, my particular journey. I've had this sense of there's something I have to do and never quite doing it. And then when the book was completed and done and ready to go, I suddenly thought, oh, I've done it. That's it. Mm-hmm. Now, I hope there's more, because I love creating, and there's certainly, the ideas are still forming and they need challenging and developing and just scratching the surface. But in some significant way on my particular story, that monkey's not on my back. It feels like, ah, okay, that's where it was going. And, you know, Carl Jung, who is relevant because of the shadow, because it's his thing, you know, he said he often found that there was key moments in when someone was young where a seed was sown, which came to fruition later in their life. And that was the kind of the, like any story, like a movie, you know, like the movie starts there and it's going there, and then you reach the end, that's where it was going. Like that. And he had that, and I certainly had that, you know, experience where I was very young, which was the seed where all of this came from. And then that feeling of, this is the fruition, not just the philosophy really, Charlie, but what I've seen recently is that there's a philosophy, but there's also all the practices which I've been developing to do with how you experience the deep awake state. So it's not just it's actually a whole take on the where I think spirituality needs to go, the new form of spirituality that needs to emerge. So it's I really think we need one, and we need it bad, and it's happening, but we need to frame it clearly. So this is my contribution to where it needs to go next. Mm-hmm. And it needs to bring in all these elements, which I see with what you're doing. It's like, there's this huge influence I see in you, obviously, because of your past with Tibetan Buddhism, which is a very deep old tradition, a very varied and rich tradition. And then there's like, well, now you're in on the shadow. Oh, okay. And dreaming. It's like all of these things, how do they all fit together? Because they do. In actuality, they do. Just look. So how can we understand them as one thing? And that will mean challenging a lot of preconceptions, seeing things in new ways. And hopefully, by integrating all that together, we'll have a better form of spirituality, which can challenge this dead materialism or objectivism, which is so prevalent, and bring in something optimistic and more real, just realistic to our actual human experience. Because our actual human experience is magic.
Yeah.
Truth be told, nearly everyone experiences that. Full of meaning and the story, you know, it's like, this is what it is. So what does it mean?
Yeah, it's great and it's terrifying and it's,
yeah,
it's traumatic and it's exciting and it's I mean, look at us now. What a fascinating and terrifying time to be alive. But yep, we're alive.
Yeah, yeah.
It's exactly. Right? This is happening. There's no rehearsal.
Yeah.
It's happening. Tim, there's one more thing. Well, so many more things I want to talk to you about, but I'm aware about keeping this this part of our chat anyway to a certain length. I was watching one of your videos recent where you were interviewing Andrew Cohen, and it made me reflect on something that there was a chapter in the book which I basically kind of took out, but I had been writing about it and exploring it, which was basically the shadow of spiritual teachers. The bit that ended up in the book, right, was a bit where I talk about the golden shadow, where I talk about the fact I'm very aware that my spiritual teacher, my guru, Lama Yeshe Rinpoche, is aware that he is allowing me to project my golden shadow onto him. And my argument is that any guru worth their salt will just be a mirror and just boom, directly reflect your golden projections back. Nothing will stick. And that actually the problems happen when they are not a mirror and the projections start to stick. When I was watching your video, I thought it was really interesting. And I wanted to ask you, what is your take on the need for spiritual teachers to integrate their shadows and the cost of what can occur when somebody projects their golden shadow onto somebody who's not fully integrated their own?
Well, great question. My own feeling now is, look, you know, people do great work in all traditions, and I really do respect that. I respect the past, indeed. For the future, my own feeling is we need to leave that all behind. That the time has come, we've reached such a level of individuation in the West especially, and the East is catching up fast, that we need to empower people, not accept their projections. And that when we play out that old, really ancient, I mean, it's a very, very old thing, you know, that method, that we're actually not helping anymore. That really it needs to be just passed straight back. No, it's in you. No, it's in you. And so, I mean, the Zen people were doing this a long time ago. You know, if you see the Buddha on the road, kill him. Mm-hmm. If you project it onto somebody else, they have their pictures of their masters like this, you know, because it was like, don't see them as anything. But, yeah, you know, don't, even then it was like, oh, they're crazy wisdom. You know, it's like, oh, no, don't stop it. So my feeling is, look, that whole model's finished. And the danger of it is everywhere. Because if you've been around spirituality for as long as I have, you make so many, there's so much harm caused by the fact that we're creating, putting people on, giving them an authority that no one can have. We do the same thing with God or channeled wisdom, anything. It's like we need to meet as fellow explorers and then learn from people who've got some wisdom. Hurrah. But not absolute. And it has to keep returning to the person, because everyone is on this journey. Everyone, the Dalai Lama, everybody is on a journey. They can't not be. And it's an evolutionary journey. And that evolutionary journey will be constantly about growing. And therefore, there is always things which could be seen as shadow. And as we move on, things which were okay at one time, we're doing this around women right now, for instance, yeah, or race, or, you know, things which we
gender.
Yeah. They weren't a thing, and now they are. Why? We've moved on. So now we can go back to all the great spiritual teachers of the last 100 years and go, oh my God, they had this really outdated.
Yeah, why didn't Buddha have gender neutral monks and nuns?
Exactly.
Nuns? Yeah,
exactly. And, and, it, And it, rather than go, look, they were the cutting edge and the leading edge of their time, but that's not absolute. It's not like they arrived. They just brought it, took it forward in the evolutionary process. And someone sent me an email after that, confronting email, actually. Good. Not confronting to me, but to my thoughts. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of agreeing, and he was talking about the Tibetans. He was talking about Marpa and Milarepa.
Yeah.
And just went, what terrible role models. And I went, yeah, terrible. If we're looking at what the way they treated their students, or Bodhidharma wouldn't accept, you know, according to legend, wouldn't accept his first disciple until the disciple cut off his arm to show how much he wanted enlightenment. It's like, this is crazy. We mustn't be holding this up as a model for how we do spirituality. We must say, yeah, that's kind of legendary and it's of the past. And we're done with that now. Mm-hmm. And maybe it played a role then. Maybe it was so tough to get anywhere then that you had to be, you know, mega disciplined, kind of obsessive, slightly neurotic person to get anywhere, but not now. And also it depends on how you see it. If you see the whole psyche and individuality as a kind of an unnecessary, unfortunate thing you need to get rid of, then what the hell? But if you see it as the very thing to nurture and grow and form into a robust, healthy, compassionate soul, which is awake enough to be in touch with the oneness and therefore a vehicle for love, that's a completely different gender now. Now we're talking about how can we do that? And maybe these old techniques are not really helping much.
Brilliant. Dudes, I'm aware of time, and I'm also aware we've done very little talking about our online courses. But I think that's cool because we just have a chat, and then the people dig you, they're going to check out your online course. People dig me, they're going to check out my online course too. So I think far better that than us kind of sneakily putting in these promotional messages throughout this. You know, you get that to people talking, they're like, oh, and by the way, at week 6 of this thing, we get it, you've got a product to sell. So I've got a cool online course about shadow integration. You've got your brand new online course about emergent spirituality. We've both got books about it. People dig it, they can check them out. And if they don't dig it, then I hope they've dug this talk, because I have. And it's been really fun, man. As always, it's fun talking to you. And yeah, it's brilliant, and it's authentic, and you're the same on camera as off camera, off camera as on camera. It's always a good sign of someone who's doing their work.
Likewise, my friend.
Thank you so much, and I hope your crowd enjoy this video, and I hope my crowd enjoy this video, and maybe we will do another soon. Great. Thanks so much, Tim. See ya.